This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte.
There's a lot of talk in the news these days about civility and the like, and the Gary Chamber of Commerce is sponsoring once again another World Civility Day. And to find out a little bit about the history of the topic, as well as what's coming up for this year's event, we have Chuck Hughes, the Executive Director of the Gary Chamber of Commerce, with us. Chuck, thanks for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Well, Chris, thank you for the opportunity.
Talk about the importance, certainly, from the Gary Chamber of Commerce's point of view of civility and what that kind of led into the creation of the World Civility Day.
Well, Chris, we were in my public policy committee meeting. We have various committees of the chamber, and they were looking for an initiative. And this is something that I had been thinking about for years. And I said to them, let's kind of look around and see what's going on in the world right now. I mean, you've got bullying, you've got road rage, you've got domestic situations, you've got people who are having discussions and the discourse is not civil. I said, you know what, public policy is a broad-ranging aspect of a business organization. Why don't we adopt a civility initiative? And so when I mentioned that to the chair, Dr. Gordon Bradshaw, and the other committee members, they loved the idea. So initially what we were going to do, and this, mind you, was 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. This preceded much of what's the angst and the incivility that we're seeing occurring right now. So we were ahead of the curve in that regard. And so what we were going to do was have an initiative that we would try to share throughout our chamber membership so that maybe the meetings would be smoother and people would be able to have better relationships, which would translate into being able to handle transactions between them even better. And so it was going to be internal at first. So I decided to call Chris White at the Times, the publisher of the Times newspaper, because I said, well, you know, this is something that maybe we can share with other organizations, other groups, or at least make notice that this is something that we're starting here in the Gary Chamber. And so when I called Chris, I asked him if he could, you know, just mention what we're doing here. And so he said, what is it? I said, well, it's merely a civility campaign. In fact, when we adopted it, we called it Community Civility Counts. That's the name of the initiative.
Uh-huh.
And so Chris says, are you serious? I said, yeah. He says, look, he says, that is wonderful. He says, man, you ought to see the letters to the editor, the voices of the people, the kind of comments we get. We can't print the majority of them. He said they're full of vile, vicious vulgarities and blah, blah. And so he said, hey, I think that's wonderful and anything we can do to help. So subsequently, the Times came on as a media partner. And it started there. And we began with the Times doing essay contests where young people could write in and describe times in which they performed a civil action towards someone, or in reverse, someone did it for them. And all of the essays were printed. In fact, we awarded a young person at the Pierogi Fest for the winning essay.
Oh.
And so it started there. Now, Dr. Bradshaw, who's the head of my public policy committee, also has a relationship with a special counsel ambassador to several African countries, Dr. Clyde Rivers. And they're part of a organization called Golden Rule International. So it's kind of amazing how all of this kind of fell into place, because Ambassador Rivers, he serves several African countries. I mean, some of the most violent African countries there are, and he was looking for some type of blueprint to be able to take to these countries, and so this just worked kind of well. So ultimately, what developed from that was, since there was so much initial enthusiasm, then we started to engage all of the local governments around here, county government, the Boys and Girls Clubs, different organizations. We had other states who were inquiring about what we were doing and how we were doing it. And it just kind of blossomed, and it just started to get legs of its own. And so after we took it to all of our local governments and universities and such, Senator Lonnie Randolph invited us to Indianapolis. He said he wanted to have a resolution there and have us present. And so when we got down there. It was actually adopted by the entire Indiana State Legislature, both the House and Senate, our Community Civility Counts initiative. Now, Ambassador Rivers, what he did was he honored Dr. Bradshaw and I first a couple of years ago at the Gerald Ford Presidential Library in Grand Rapids on this initiative with all of his constituents from different countries and states who come annually to his event. And then the next year, he actually gave us an award on Capitol Hill for the initiative. Last year, Congressman Visklosky, before a full session of Congress on C-SPAN and in front of the entire Congress, asked permission to speak from the Speaker of the House, and he acknowledged this wonderful initiative that's occurring in Northwest Indiana. And so it's just blossomed into now we're at the fourth World Civility Day. And so if you want me to exhale and give you an opportunity to speak at any point, let me know.
Well, let's take it to the point here. Now, we have certainly, I'm sure that the day is going to include a lot of very important comments, a lot of chances to talk about the serious nature of being civil in government and in just life in general here with all that's going on. But also, too, this particular year is noted by some interesting star-studded entertainment. So there's a chance to not only take a look seriously at civility, but also to celebrate it as well, too. Tell us a little bit about the entertainment that's planned, I'm sure, later in the day on World Civility Day coming up.
Well, Chris, if I could digress just a bit, our first World Civility Day, I decided to do a World Civility Day once. Hey, I said, we have an ambassador engaged. We have Africa involved. Now, ultimately, last year, we had 12, 13, 14 different countries represented for our World Civility Day. So the first one was at Majestic Star Casino, and we sold out their ballroom. The ambassador was our keynote speaker. And the next year, we decided to incorporate workshops because we had groups and individuals coming in from different states who were trying to do similar initiatives, and so they were amazed at how we were able to get traction, and so we decided to do workshops. So now it's a two-day event. We have workshops at the Indiana Welcome Center in the mornings where there are different workshops on various aspects of civility. It could be civility in the workplace, anti-bullying, civility in your friends, and whatever. You know, they choose their topics, and so they discuss various aspects of civility. And after that is when we go to the Avalon in Hobart, where we have our big civility awards dinner, and that is where the ambassador typically gives civility awards to these groups and individuals and schools or youth who are practicing civility, promoting the concept, and it's a great, great event. We had Attorney General Curtis Hill was our second speaker. Last year we had a young lady by the name of Carolyn Lukensmeyer. She's from Southern California. She's written 12, 13 books on civility, so she's an expert. This year we decided to incorporate people who could personify civility in different respects, and they are notable people. As you say, our entertainment schedule coupled with the message that we're trying to send on civility is outstanding. Let's begin with a gentleman by the name of Reggie Thornton. Now, I don't know if you've been watching This American Soul on BET, the story of Soul Train and Don Cornelius. Well, it's all over the news, and it's a show, it's a mini-series that comes on Tuesdays at 8, I'm not promoting them per se, but on BET. In fact, it'll be on tomorrow. And it talks about the story of Soul Train or whatever, but little-known fact is this gentleman, Reggie Thornton, from Gary, was an original member of the Soul Train show when it first originated on WCIU-TV, Channel 26 in Chicago.
Right.
And then he was one of the select dancers to go to Los Angeles when Don Cornelius debuted the show in Los Angeles. And so he's going to come in town, and he's going to come and talk about in a competitive environment as such as that was, because who did not want to dance on national television how, you know, civility was important and how there was a lack of civility on certain occasions or whatever. But it just kind of gives a different perspective of an actual situation. And so we're glad to have him. We also have the saxophone player for the world-famous Ohio Players singing group. In fact, this gentleman's name is Michael Turner. Guess what? they just performed in Virginia. They performed in Dallas a couple of days ago. He's a Gary resident.
Yeah.
I actually discovered him on the Soul Train cruise last year when the band was performing along with Smokey Robinson and some others on that cruise, and they introduced the band members and introduced their saxophonist, Michael Turner, from Gary, Indiana. So he's going to come and give a perspective on civility in that industry and what it means and how it works and all of that. And we were very fortunate to get our headliner, the key person, who, if you've studied her career, had some ups and downs, had some situations, has rebounded tremendously, and is well respected in the entertainment and music industry as one of the nicest, most civil people you'd want to meet. And that's four-time Grammy-nominated and Tony Award winner Miss Melba Moore. Mm-hmm. So we're, in fact, bringing people now, in terms of what Dr. Rivers has suggested, maybe about 15 people representing various countries. And we've had people fly 30 hours to come to Northwest Indiana. And a star-studded lineup of entertainers who are going to even further express the need for civility. So we're kind of excited about what is occurring, and we appreciate the opportunity that you're giving, because we hope all of Northwest Indiana embrace the fact that this is wonderful, this is positive, and this is something that we can be at the forefront of the nation.
Well, it sounds like there are some great events, not only during the day that's going to happen at the Indiana Welcome Center in Hammond with the workshops, but also this Civility Awards Dinner that's happening in that evening. We're talking April 11th, of course, at the Avalon Manor. So there are a lot of, with all these great performers and people with very inspiring and worthy comments to hear. It's worth certainly looking into. And if anybody's interested in being a part, being an attendance to this program, how can they find out more about the program and if they need to get tickets and the like, where they should need to get them?
Our phone number is area code 219-885-7407. And people can actually register for just a workshop. They can register for just the awards dinner. But of course, if they want full day participation, there's one discounted price that will enable them to partake in all of the activities. And I didn't mention, too, that, again, we were very fortunate to have several schools, high schools, bring their kids to the workshops. And Ambassador Rivers is great in that the kids don't just come as observers. They're interactive. They get a chance to meet, greet, talk, participate with some of these people from around the world. And it's just a wonderful educational and life experience for them as well. So we just think that it has really checked all the boxes. All we need now is just for everyone in Northwest Indiana to share the pride that we have in being able to have an event and an initiative that can attract people to our beautiful area in such numbers.
Well, Chuck, it sounds like with two great events all combined together in that one day, World Civility Day, coming up on April 11th, it's certainly worth checking out for the workshops, and if they can't attend that, perhaps to take part in attending the awards dinner and the great entertainment plan for that. It's, we said, coming up on April 11th, and there's more information available on the Gary Chamber of Commerce website. And, Chuck, we thank you very much for bringing us up to date, and we trust that this fourth, I guess what we were considering, fourth annual World Civility Day is just as much a success as the very first one.
Well, thank you for that, Chris. And I'm sorry I'm a man of few words, but
well, we appreciate you. And we appreciate you spending the time and going in great detail about this, because this is a great event that's all fit together in one very important day. Looking seriously into the question of civility, this is a great one to not only learn from during the day with the workshops at the Indiana Welcome Center, but to enjoy some great entertainment that night at the Avalon Manor. Thanks for being with us to talk about it today.
Thank you, Chris. I really appreciate that opportunity. In Northwest Indiana, let's be the greatest host there are for all these people coming in to see us. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Chuck Hughes is the Executive Director of the Gary Chamber of Commerce. This next story comes to you from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs these with intentional conversation to help forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
I grew up in the Glen Park, a south section of Gary, if you want to call it a subdivision, it was Junedale. Glen Park was a mixture of Polish, Macedonian, Lithuanian, Greek, German. I being Slovak descent, and it was families that, after the war, were looking for housing. Now, the downtown section, the old established section, you had your Tolleston, you had Etna, your Miller area. It was a big melting pot of, steel workers and industrial workers. The mainstay was U.S. Steel. There was always jobs at U.S. Steel. Even when you were in high school, if you were old enough, you can get a summer job at U.S. Steel. U.S. Steel was like one big family back in the day. You had Goodfellow Club. They had camps. And I went to a couple years, I think I went 3 or 4 years to a Goodfellow camp. They had the boys' camp and the girls' camp, and that was out by Chesterton. They had a U.S. Steel concert production where they had dancers, singers, full orchestra. Picture that Memorial Auditorium down in Gary. And it was the U.S. Steel spring concert, and it was professional people that worked there. You had U.S. Steel carolers. A lot of people don't remember them now because it's been so far back, but back when we were in elementary school, the carolers would come and they'd dress up in the Dickens era with the top hats and stuff. It was just like a big family. They'd have tours and where you could bring your families in. They'd have hot dogs and Cokes for everybody. And see, that's what it's hard to explain because U.S. Steel and Gary kind of like went right together. Back in the old days, U.S. Steel even, they would supply power to the neighborhoods. And they also supplied coke for people to burn in their coal furnaces and stuff. It was all, a community thing. I remember it vividly when Armstrong first put his foot on the moon. It was 1969, that July, after the United States landed on the moon, that technology just changed everything. It just took months after that. Things started getting smaller. Radios that they made with tubes and everything started being, solid state. Because cars back then were just like big tanks. Everything was just huge, and heavy. But the steel mills, that was, their mainstay, the auto industry and everything. But when things started changing to plastic in cars, like the buttons, that was all used to be metal, or your window crank arms and that was all metal. The dashboards were metal, that became plastic. And I still believe that strongly today. That was the big turning point when the United States went on the moon. People don't realize that. The technology that came to get those people there, then that was released out. And that's part of the reason, I think, where the change was with Gary and other cities. When I first went on management back in the 70s, we'd watch a video in a classroom and how we have to fight and be top number one steel producers and everything. And we have to beat Japan at their own game and we can do it and everything. And it would get you charged up. And then I remember one day, I had like this feeling how you get in your stomach that something's not quite right. And this is just my own personal experience, but I walked out. It was right down on Broadway by the main gate there, our main office. And there was these two big tour buses, all these Japanese people, and they've got the Nikons with the and they're going to take a tour of the mill. They're taking pictures. That was the beginning that I thought, this country is spread out with the industry, with different countries and putting their assets. And sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't.
You can find more regional stories online at welcomeproject.valpo.edu. Indiana has the 7th worst infant mortality rate and the 3rd worst maternal mortality rate in the country. Several bills in the legislative session have aimed to address the issue. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jill Sheridan spoke recently with Indiana State Department of Health Commissioner Christina Box about a bill that aims to tackle the issue through a 2-pronged approach.
Take us through some of the points of the bill as it relates to these issues in Indiana.
Most certainly. We believe that 1007 is going to decrease infant mortality, and it's also going to decrease our maternal mortality. The major way that this bill will be able to do that is by addressing women that are covered by Medicaid in our highest risk zip codes and counties across the state and offering them the opportunity as part of their wraparound services to have a healthcare-based provider, whether that is a community health worker from the community, whether that is nurse-family partnerships, it may be paramedicine, depending on certain of our counties that really don't have other opportunities, or it may be healthy families, which we have in all of our counties across the state. The ability to attach women to a navigator, say, an OB navigator, to walk through the pregnancy with them to make sure that they have an even deeper understanding of the risk factors that they are addressing, such as substance use disorder in pregnancy, smoking during pregnancy, getting into prenatal care in that first trimester and maintaining the care, and then the importance of maintaining that care for the child, and also addressing those socioeconomic factors that we know can be a barrier that prevent women from getting into care early in pregnancy and maintaining that care.
Part of the bill also requires a new verbal screening.
We're trying to address substance use disorder. As you know, we've had a pilot program in the state of Indiana since 2016, and we've been looking at umbilical cords of our babies that are at risk and have found significant percentages of babies that are born exposed to different drugs. And so what we want to make sure we're doing is that every pregnant woman receives a universal verbal screen as early in pregnancy as they are found to be pregnant, and then throughout pregnancy as indicated, because that then gives us the opportunity to have that brief intervention with that woman to not only address the education about whatever drugs or compound she's using, but also to explain to her the effects that that will have not only on her own health, but her baby's health.
When we're talking about the piece of the community healthcare workers and the OB navigators and really sort of broadening our thoughts on, you know, who provides care to women as they go through pregnancy, that's really the point.
What it is meant is to be an adjunct. It is that person that kind of comes alongside them and walks through that pregnancy in the first year of the baby's life, kind of like the navigation we have done in cancer now for a number of years. And it's further reinforcement of the education that they're already getting from their obstetrical and their family doctor providers.
As you mentioned, you know, there are great disparities in some of our rural areas, but also here in Marion County, I mean, women are struggling to get care.
Of our 16 or 13 highest risk zip codes, we have three of them in Lake County. We have six of them here in Marion County, where we know that there is plenty of care available. It's just a question of not getting those women connected to care. So that the hope is that if we can identify these women early in pregnancy by Medicaid data that comes through, and then offer them this as a part of their wraparound Medicaid care to have an OB navigator walk through pregnancy with them, that we will be getting more women into care early in pregnancy.
And we know also, you know, that Indiana's rates have remained fairly stagnant as it relates to infant mortality, but Black women and Black babies in the state of Indiana are faring much worse. Will this legislation be able to help them?
We have seen our infant mortality rate as a state go down from 7.5 to 7.3, but unfortunately at the same time we saw our Black infant mortality go up from 14.4 to 15.3, well over 2.5 times the white infant mortality in our state. So our belief system is by implementing these programs in these high-risk zip codes that we're going to be addressing the Black and disparate populations that we're trying to make sure we're caring for.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jill Sheridan talking with Indiana State Department of Health Commissioner Dr. Christina Box. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte, and we have with us two very important people that are very closely watching the impact of a measure that is making through the Indiana General Assembly, in particular a Senate bill that is now before members of the Indiana House of Representatives that, if it gets enacted into law, could have a major impact on the Indiana public's rights to the shoreline of Lake Michigan, as well as the impact of all of the coastal communities along the way, stretching from Gary all the way east past Michigan City. We have with us today Natalie Johnson. She's Executive Director of Save the Dunes. And we have with us as well Gary Mayor Karen Freeman Wilson. And these ladies very closely watching the results of what is known in the legislature as Senate Bill 581. And this has a bill, like it's a bill really that has to do with the impact of action that was taken a long time ago, it seems, by the Indiana Supreme Court about the rights of residents who own property on the lakefront.
And that in turn ended up going, at least would have been up for review by the U.S. Supreme Court. But the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear the case. And that's where we stand right now with the Senate Bill 581. Natalie Johnson and Mayor Freeman Wilson, thank you for joining us on the program today, both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Natalie, if you will take us up to where we stand right now, the concern that Save the Dunes, the Long Beach Community Alliance, and now, of course, all of the communities, for that matter, along Lake Michigan, have about this Senate Bill 581.
You know, it's been quite a ride. This whole issue started about 5 years ago, whether or not the public owned the beach or if the private homeowners had the right to lay claim to that area. And we celebrated February 2018 when the Indiana Supreme Court ruled that, in fact, the Hoosiers, they are the ones that own the lakefront. They are the ones that have that right from the natural ordinary high water mark down into the water. And that was very thrilling that the U.S. Supreme Court, they didn't want to hear that case again. Therefore, they said, yes, Indiana Supreme Court, you figured it out, and that is law. And so today, Senate Bill 581, which has now made its way into the House, is challenging what the Indiana Supreme Court ruled back in February 2018. So really, the General Assembly here is overstepping their boundaries. It's coming up with something that is unlawful and against what the Supreme Court of Indiana said, and it threatens to give away that state-owned shoreline to a number of private beachfront homeowners along the lake. So really taking that land out of Hoosiers' hands. And it would also threaten and allow private construction of seawalls and other barriers that could prevent people from walking along the beach, as well as strip local governments of their authority to even protect their municipal parks and dune property along that shoreline area. So really, altogether, 581 is a bad bill. Mm-hmm. Just bad, and really flies in the face of everything that we've all been working so hard towards all this time.
I know, Mayor Freeman Wilson, you and others in the city of Gary have been very concerned about the impact that this bill might have if it's enacted into law on a measure that's well-known, and in fact has been supported by lots of people along the way, the Marquette Plan. Tell us what your concern is. Tell us what your concern is about this measure and what it would actually do to the Marquette Plan.
That is absolutely our concern. The Marquette Plan that was the brainchild of Congressman Peter Vislovsky essentially was designed to provide public access and to increase public access to Lake Michigan. We believe that Senate Bill 581 really does threaten that public access, particularly when you look at lakefront parks like Marquette Beach in Gary, which is adjacent to the National Lakeshore Park. When you look at places like the Portage Lakefront Park, which is also adjacent to the National Lakeshore Park, and to limit public access is to really threaten one of the greatest benefits and one of the greatest selling items that we have for Northwest Indiana.
What, Mayor, did folks have to say when you learned about this measure making it out of the Senate and coming up for review in the House? You had a chance to take a good look at it. And what kind of reaction has come from residents as well as community leaders in Gary about this?
Well, both community leaders and residents alike are concerned, but the good news about this, if there is any, or the silver lining maybe, is that there is an option, there is an alternative, and that Senator Talian's bill, Senate Bill 553, which does have a carve out for the public land and does address some of the concerns that have been raised by 581. Mm-hmm.
But obviously that Senator Talian's bill would probably maybe be hampered a bit if this other measure made it through.
Absolutely. And what our hope is that in the House there will be a concerted effort to resolve the conflict between the bills in the favor of public access, in the favor of the right of local communities to really govern the what happens on their lakefront, mm-hmm. particularly when you look at beaches and parks like Marquette and the Portage Park and even some of the other parks along the Lake Michigan shoreline. The Marquette plan really is a viable, good thing for Northwest Indiana, and we'd like to see it continue and continue in the way that, quite frankly, the courts contemplated.
Madam Mayor, what you and of course, Patricia Sharkey, who is a member of the Long Beach Community Alliance, and, of course, you representing Save the Dunes, Natalie Johnson, are you able to do in getting this lobbying campaign underway? What's the first step or steps underway right now to make sure that Hoosier lawmakers in the Indiana House know exactly what they will be looking at if they haven't reviewed it yet?
Mayor Freeman Wilson put it best that we're talking about something that is a true asset here. This is our access, our right to enjoy this beautiful shoreland. And it is something that really enhances Hoosier's quality of life. Right now, we believe that there may be a lot of misunderstanding in the House of Representatives of what 581 really intends to do. And so this is an opportunity where anyone listening, and we encourage all voices, it cannot just be Save the Dunes alone, nor can it be just the municipalities. We need everyone to raise their voice right now and to let their representatives know that 581 is a bad bill and that 553, that is, in fact, the good one. If there can be compromises, that's fantastic, but on its own, 581 needs to be stopped. And people can take action today by contacting the Committee on Natural Resources in the Indiana House, starting with the chair, Representative Sean Eberhardt, and vice chair, Representative Jeff Ellington. So those are two people that can be contacted right away. It never hurts to, of course, inform Governor Holcomb, nor does it hurt to contact the Department of Natural Resources Director, Cameron Clark. And then, of course, everyone's local representative as well. But truly, now is the time to say that we value access to the beach, and that is one of the things that makes living in Northwest Indiana so wonderful. Please, representatives, do not take that away from us. We don't want that to be challenged. And so Save the Dunes will be putting out action alerts and something that can be visited on our website at savedunes.org. If people are looking for this contact information and more information on how to lobby and advocate against Senate Bill 581.
Now, Mayor Freeman Wilson, what have you been able to do so far in getting the local lobbying effort underway within the city of Gary, and particularly for residents who take advantage of Marquette Park, and even the residents of Miller Beach, too? They're directly affected by all this.
We have a very active local committee that partners with us relative to Marquette Park, and so we are making them aware of it and asking them to reach out to all of the members of the General Assembly. So often we only reach out to the people who represent us, but I think it's important to reach out to those who are looking at this bill and who are authors of this bill and who may not really see the impact that it is having or it can have. And so often the bills are hastily developed and hastily drafted that sometimes you have to spend some time during the session kind of really talking through the full consequences of something like that, which will lead to an amendment, which will lead to compromise.
Obviously, it's one of these things you've got to do right away because there aren't many days left in the 2019 General Assembly session.
Well, it goes to the end of April, so we've got a little time, but mm-hmm. we don't want to take this lightly. And we're certainly making sure that our folks are informed.
Well, Mayor Freeman Wilson, thank you for your efforts in joining in with this effort by Save the Dunes and the Long Beach Community Alliance in alerting the residents and beachgoers all throughout Indiana, not just ones that live here in Northwest Indiana, about the Senate Bill 581 and the inherent dangers if it gets passed. And we thank you, too, Natalie Johnson from Save the Dunes for telling us about this. And we'll keep an eye out for those action alerts coming up on the website. We appreciate you being with us today, too.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
I do appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Take care.
Now, an update on the Senate Bill 581. It has made it over, as mentioned, into the House and is sitting for review in the House Judiciary Committee, but no action has yet been taken on the measure. The Indiana Senate approved an expansion of the state's Stand Your Ground law, and Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith tells us about a heated, hour-long floor debate.
Indiana's Stand Your Ground law protects you from criminal charges if you use force to defend yourself, your property, or someone else. The proposed bill extends that to civil court. It says a criminal can't sue the person who used that justified force on them. Democratic Senator Karen Tallien says the bill provides immunity for, quote, vigilante justice.
You go out and you shoot somebody that you maybe think is doing wrong. I mean, this is right out of Charles Bronson.
But Republican Senator Mike Young says that's not the case.
If a jury finds and it goes to trial that you didn't have justification, you don't get immunity under this bill.
The measure goes back to the House. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
The central measure, a message rather, of Monday's State of the Higher Education address is one that Hoosiers have heard before. And Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jeannie Lindsay says it focused on the need for a more skilled workforce.
The Commissioner for Higher Education, Teresa Lubbers, reinforced one of Governor Eric Holcomb's biggest priorities during her annual State of Higher Education address.
More than ever, the imperative to develop human capital is the most critical issue facing the state of Indiana.
And in order to do that, she says education officials and employers need to work together. Lubbers stressed the importance of higher education changing to meet the needs of more adult learners. She says Indiana's largest industries are likely to see more automated jobs, but people with more education have a lower risk of losing their jobs to automation. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. There is a business called Indiana Originals. It's been around for a while. It's celebrating a fifth anniversary, as a matter of fact, this year. But to find out more about what the company does and how it is expanding into Northwest Indiana, let's turn to one of the co-owners of Indiana Originals, Mel McMahon Stone. And Mel, thanks for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, this is probably a company that most folks up here in the region have not heard of. Tell us how you and your husband got Indiana Originals started and what Indiana Originals does.
Oh, I'm happy to. We go all the way back to 2012. My now husband and I were walking around Monument Circle here in downtown Indianapolis, and we wanted to go someplace local for dinner. And we threw out a restaurant name, and I looked at my husband, and I said, well, is that actually local? And he said, I don't know. And I said, well, how do you know if it's local? And that's what kind of started it all. You know, we started researching. There wasn't a directory. There wasn't a sticker. Apps weren't really that big in 2012 yet, so there wasn't an app. And there was really no one that was defining local as independently owned in Indiana. And so in May of 2014, we launched what we call Indiana Originals. So we help you find local, independent, Indiana-based businesses faster and easier.
And I know the side benefit, I guess, of this, of not only finding the businesses for whatever case you may want to, whether it's finding some place to eat or some service of some type, it's to help build the community as well.
It is. We are very much community-based. Our mission is to create healthier, stronger communities and more jobs in Indiana by encouraging and facilitating a greater use of independent Indiana original businesses. So not only do we help consumers find these businesses faster and easier, we help our members find the resources they need to be successful.
In getting started 5 years ago, did you have a good source, I guess, of ready businesses that might become members of the Indiana Originals family, so to speak? Or did you have to really search out there to find them?
Well, fortunately, here in Indianapolis, I have a pretty strong network. My background is actually in broadcasting, so I've been in television and radio for just as long as I've been in business development. So when I started researching and started talking to people about this, I quickly found out that there were a lot of people like me. They want to support these local businesses. They want to know who really is making the biggest economic impact in our communities and in our neighborhoods. And so when I launched, we had about 40 businesses that jumped on board that first year while we were really still trying to figure out exactly what we were and what we were going to be.
Mm-hmm. Now, since you're based in central Indiana, did all of those businesses seem to be based there around Indianapolis and vicinity? Or did you have a chance to start branching out? When did you reach out from beyond central Indiana into northwest Indiana?
Most of our members are here in central Indiana, but my husband is actually from Warren County. So, just west of Purdue. Mm-hmm. And so we have members in Warren County and Benton County. We have a member, Freedom Foods, in Wolcott, Indiana. They just jumped on board. So we have, kind of this cluster in northwest Indiana. We started talking to businesses in South Bend. And we have businesses as far south as DuBois County, in Jasper, Indiana, that have joined, because they all believe in the mission. They are proud to be here in Indiana. These business owners want people to know that they're local and that they are really contributing to the community. And the more we can spend that money locally, the more everybody wins. And so actually, because we are starting to grow so much outside of central Indiana, we have really kind of evaluated our community and our events and how we're handling things. And so right now we're in the very exciting process of rebuilding our website and really building an online community that's going to kind of be a mix of some of the websites that are out there now that we're already using, but it's going to be more community-based. So you don't have to just be a member, to participate in our forums and find out what's going on. As a consumer, you can ask for businesses that do certain things or ask for businesses to participate in your charity events, and it doesn't all have to get funneled through me anymore. So I'm very, very excited about this new launch and how it's really going to grow among all the 92 counties here in Indiana.
Now, speaking of growth there, how many members would you say that you have with Indiana Originals now, and what types of businesses and services do they represent?
Well, we have over 200 members, and just to clarify, we do charge a fee for membership. Mm-hmm. So we have, a certification process, and then you pay to be a member, because that membership gives you access to lots of different resources and lots of different discounts. So we are not a free membership service like some other ones. But we have everything from, coffee shops and bakeries to real estate agents to insurance agents. We have nonprofit organizations, photographers, automotive, car repair shops. We have, different places that you can go, different attractions. It's all different categories because we want to show people that it's easy to live a local lifestyle if you know where to look.
Now, since you're mostly focusing on buy local or shop local, I guess maybe I should say, we know that recently Walmart's announced that, at least in Indiana, that they are looking for more vendors for their supply chain. How does Indiana Originals, how does it fit in with the Walmart concept?
So something that's really interesting about Indiana Originals and our organization is that we try really hard to be the partner between national and local. So there are a lot of community-centric programs that really just focus on, a neighborhood or a county, but they don't really go beyond that. Our goal is to help our members grow to whatever level they want to be. So we kind of act as a middleman sometimes on behalf of our members. So, for example, with the Indianapolis International Airport and their big revamp of their concessions program, we were right there through the entire process, fighting for local, helping local businesses get acknowledged. And we're still going to work with these businesses in the airport to make sure local products are there available for travelers. And so with a situation like Walmart, that's the same thing. We have people that come to our website as buyers, and they look for different items that they're interested in, and then we help connect them to that member to get that process going and get that process started. And then if our members are not familiar with these situations, or maybe they haven't scaled up to that level yet, we help educate them and find them the resources that they need to be able to get in front of these big buyers and get into those stores.
Now, if anybody's interested in finding out more about Indiana Originals, or for that matter, if there's a small business out there that is interested in becoming part of the Indiana Originals family, how do they do so?
It's very simple. You just go to IndianaOriginals.com, and as long as your business is headquartered here in Indiana, locally owned and operated, and not part of a franchise that's headquartered out of state, you qualify. And right now, membership starts at just $10 a month. So we try to make it very attainable for everybody, no matter whether you've been in business for days or for decades.
Well, Mel, thanks for being with us to talk a little bit about Indiana Originals, and we'll look forward to seeing the updates on the website and finding out more, and maybe find more besides Wolcott and maybe eventually South Bend and some of the other areas here in Northwest Indiana that might have businesses that want to join the Indiana Originals family. Thanks for being with us to talk about it today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Mel McMahon-Stone is one of the co-owners of Indiana Originals. Northwest Indiana residents who suffer from dementia and other cognitive issues and their caregivers can enjoy a cruise in the Caribbean because a Hobart High School and a Ball State University Nursing School graduate has worked hard to make it happen. Kathy Shove created Elite Cruises and Vacations because of her experiences as a nurse, and she was with us on Regionally Speaking to talk about it.
I was the director of nursing and regional director for senior living options for home health agencies, for hospice communities. And I just wanted somehow to create a way that everyone could still enjoy their life. I wanted to give families, loved ones, caregivers the opportunity to still enjoy their loved ones' experiences with their loved ones, with their families, without any barriers. So we create travel options for clients with cognitive impairment, dementia, COPD, heart issues, cancer complications, Alzheimer's disease, weakness, slow walkers, Parkinson's, and any other conceptual medical issue that exists. I travel with a group of professionals, including additional RNs, and we see that everyone has a safe, comfortable, happy experience.
What's it like to be able to set up your business to work with so many professionals as well as members of the family of the people who are really, I'm sure, enjoy the cruises as much, if not more so, than other people do? What's it like to be able to work with all these professionals and, in turn, working with the cruise lines, since you have, in this case, you're working with the Holland American Cruises?
The professionals that I work with are very, very carefully handpicked. We all have a very like-minded attitude to get the job done, because I don't necessarily have the ability to anticipate what complications, challenges might exist, and we have to be prepared to handle all of those challenges and meet the needs of not only our clients but all of their caregivers. Number one priority, keeping everyone safe, and number two, providing an experience which allows them to have lifelong amazing memories. As far as working with the cruise lines, I'm also very careful how I choose those cruise lines. We work with Holland America and Celebrity Cruise Lines because they are anxiously willing to be supportive and communicative about what I need their staff to do in order to make this successful. I have had the privilege to have dinner with the president of Holland America. I meet with the full cruise ship staff, including the captain and his other officers, before we ever sail. Everyone's fully aware of what challenges we are bringing on board his ship. But on the other hand, he has an MD on every single ship, and I do not hesitate to send a client to see a doctor if we have an issue. And I assure him that we will manage, you know, situations and problems as they arise and seek professional assistance as needed.
Mm-hmm. Are you aware, if it just happens to be in this case, what you mentioned with Holland America, that this particular cruise line has thought so well ahead in being able to take advantage of having passengers of this type on board their ships? Maybe some of the other cruise lines, if they haven't already, that they might be following suit, and you'll be having more opportunities out there for more cruises?
At this time, Holland America is excited about the opportunities. Like I said, Celebrity is also. I don't see that kind of conversation coming from any other lines right now.
Uh-huh.
But
Holland America and between Holland America and Celebrity, I can honestly travel with clients any place in the world, literally on all seven continents, any place in the world that anyone would wish to go. There's no exclusions. We are willing to take a group to take to whichever parts of the world they are interested in going. And we have 9 cruises scheduled for 2019 right now, which will be created in groups. And we're more than happy to add to that list with someone showing interest.
Well, it sounds like this is a great opportunity for people who maybe would never, ever have a chance to be on a cruise ship anytime during their life and during the time that maybe that they might need some help and certainly an opportunity to enjoy themselves the most. It sounds like the Kathy, you and others that you work with Elite Cruises and Vacations are on the right track and you've got plenty of things planned. So you're going to keep a lot of people busy on taking advantage of a lot of cruises in the future. And we're glad that you spent some time to talk about this with us today.
Thank you so much. I receive many, many accommodations and wonderful, happy clients that come and return and travel with us repeatedly. You know, we're always seeking to be able to have new first-time clients to our group, but many of our cruisers, travelers come back and travel with us additionally again.
Kathy Shove spoke from on board one of the cruise ships that she uses for her project. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for joining us. Tomorrow on the program, we have conversations with Northwest Indiana political activist Ruth Needleman, and we'll also hear from Northwest Indiana financial advisor Greg Hammer during this National Financial Literacy Month. Hope you can join us.